Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center in downtown Moscow. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Now, Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continuing recovery.
Yeah, and I am Denise, and I am a grateful believer in Jesus, and very happy to be in recovery today. How about you?
I am Radio Johnny, also really happy to be in recovery. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and doing pretty good today. Today, Denise and I want to talk a little bit about living sober. Living Sober is actually a publication that's put out. It's a book put out by Alcoholics Anonymous. And it helps people in recovery to understand what living sober actually means. In the preface to the book, it actually talks about, you know, how when we first heard the idea of living sober, you know, we were insulted by it. You know, why can't we enjoy a drink or a drug like everybody else who seems to be able to take it and walk away from it? But for people like me, it's not an option, because I just can't have one and walk away. It's the old thing about one is too many and 20 is not enough.
And all the stuff that I used to do is illegal, so that right. Just well, takes care of that. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. So one of the sections in the book talks about one of the axioms that if you've ever been in a AA room, you'll quite often see posted up around the wall, you know, with things like one day at a time and easy does it. Well, this one is live and let live. And I'm just going to read this section out of the book. We're probably going to owe money to AA.org for copyright infringement here, but I'll take my chances. Because we are in a meeting between the two of us here, yeah, so I think it's legal.
You guys just get to, you know, listen in.
So, live and let live. The old saying, live and let live, seems so commonplace. It's easy to overlook its value. Of course, one reason has been said over and over for years is that it has proved beneficial in so many ways. We AAs make some special uses of it to help us not drink. It particularly helps us cope with people who get on our nerves. Reviewing once more a little of our drinking history, many of us can see how very, very often our drinking problem appeared to be related somehow to other people. Experimenting with beer or wine in our teenage years seemed natural since so many others were doing it, and we wanted their approval. Then came weddings and bar mitzvahs and christenings and holidays and football games and cocktail parties and business lunches, and the list can go on and on. In all these circumstances, we drank at least partly because everybody else was drinking and it seemed to expect us to. Those of us who began to drink alone or to sneak a drink now and then often did so to keep some other person or people from knowing how much or how often we drank. We rarely liked to hear anybody else talk about our drinking. If they did, we frequently told them reasons for our drinking, as if we wanted to ward off criticism or complaints. Some of us found ourselves argumentative or even belligerent towards other people after drinking. Yet others of us felt we really got along better with people after a drink or two. Whether it was a social evening, a tense sale or job interview, or even making love. Our drinking caused many of us to choose our friends according to how much they drank. We even changed friends when we had outgrown their drinking styles. We preferred real drinkers to people who just took one or two. And we tried to avoid teetotalers. So that's a little from living sober about live and let live. And boy, I tell you what, I can relate to so many things in there, especially the part where it talks about...
We wanted their approval.
No, it was more when they talk about...
We really like to hear anybody else talk about our drinking.
Well, that's one of them too. The one for me was sneaking a drink, you know, not wanting others to know, you know, what my drinking habits were. And, you know, mostly I tried to, you know, hide that from my wife, who early on became very concerned at, you know, the amount I drank, you know, my behavior afterwards. I wasn't a particularly angry drunk, but I would get goofy and everyone, oh yeah, he's the funny drunk. Well, in small doses, that's probably okay. Right. But when you live with someone who can't take anything seriously and is just always out there, it's not fun anymore.
I was going to say, it might have been like a little lopsided in the responsibilities area. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely, too. I mean, when I was drinking, I called it the manana syndrome. You know, we need to take care of this. Manana. I'll do it tomorrow. And that's, you bring up a good point. I abdicated so many of my responsibilities in the family back to my wife when I was drinking, because either I didn't have time for it, or it frustrated me, or I just wouldn't do it. And you start getting pink notices in the mail from people, becomes kind of obvious that somebody's fallen down on the job. So, you know, I abdicated the work. And when I say abdicated, I didn't conscientiously say, you need to take care of this. I just didn't do it. So she picked up the ball, because she did not want her credit hammered or us to be out on the street or whatever. That made it easier for me to drink. So that worked really well for me. Just meant I could be as wild and crazy and irresponsible as I want. But getting back to the hiding the drinking, that was, I thought I maintained really well. I thought nobody knew, although anybody who smelled my breath or got within 5 feet of me could smell the alcohol. I mean, it was anything but hidden.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that it's fair to say that, well, I'll speak for myself, that in active addiction, that it just seems like I wasn't aware of how much it was noticeable. You know, like looking back at it, I'm just like, oh, geez, you know. I mean, right. I have a clearer thoughts about how things were. But at the time, I was pretty oblivious to how I appeared to other people. Right. Which is really a shame, because that really affected my family especially, you know.
Well, for sure. And the reason we were oblivious to it was, you know, it was one of those denial traits.
Mm-hmm. Well, and your brain's not working correctly either, I don't think.
Right. No. Yeah. You're way out on a limb. But, mm-hmm. I mean, we want to, you know, if somebody doesn't, you know, look you straight in the eyes and say, holy crap, your pupils are like dinner plates, you're less likely to... you know, believe that people can tell.
Right.
You know.
Right, because we're so crafty, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We can hide things so well.
Well, we certainly put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah, it was a lot of work being, you know, an alcoholic or an addict, you know.
Exactly. It is. It's exhausting.
In certain areas, yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Just trying to behave in a way that doesn't pull the covers off, you know, and let people really know what's going on inside you.
And then the lies build up, and
lies. Oh,
yeah.
We could do a whole hour on lies.
It's like heavy weighted, you know. Life feels a lot lighter now, but I'm not trying to take away from what we're talking about. But like,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a big part of it. And you know, you mentioned a few things. I was kind of laughing inside when I was going, no, that's not it. But yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I relate.
Yeah.
Why don't you pick out one that you really related to?
I mean, I remember there. Okay, so we rarely liked to hear about anyone else talk about our drinking, and so you know, I think most everyone knows that I struggled with addiction. But I remember a couple of times someone close to me coming and saying, you know, I really think this is going down the wrong way, and I'm really concerned, and that kind of thing, you know. And I was just like, rah! You know, like it was like it wasn't penetrating my brain correctly or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was just so adamant about continuing to do what I was doing, and that person was seeing the train wreckage, you know what I mean, ahead, you know,
right.
telling that it was going in a, just a huge bad direction for me.
Right, yeah. Right. They could see the building wake.
Oh, crikey. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The quote, death toll of,
right.
you know, all the things and,
oh, yeah.
you know, all the loss and devastation to other people and to myself, you know, so.
Yeah, I, to this day, I remember vividly different people. There was a fellow I worked with whose name is long forgotten. His father actually invented radar. He was one of the chief scientists that figured out how to send out radio waves and receive them back and make a picture out of it.
That's cool.
And he also died of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. He was a real heavy-duty alcoholic. And this fellow who I worked with was very sensitive to the alcoholic lifestyle. And one day when I was at work, and of course I had had a drink before I went into work at 7 a.m., I was working closely with him, and he just said to me, he says, you know, in the morning, your breath is supposed to smell like Cheerios, not whiskey. And that was all he said. Mm-hmm. He didn't lecture me about anything. I don't think he went and told anybody about anything. That was it. But I remember that.
It's true.
And he spoke truth. Was the sort of thing with mm-hmm. not only what he said, but how he said it. I could not and didn't even want to defend against it. I didn't want to say, oh, what are you talking about? That's just my mouthwash, blah, blah, blah. I just sat with it. And that was also probably getting towards the end of my really heavy drinking, near the end. And there was another occasion where a friend of mine who was like the biggest boozer and partier, this guy had like a string of DUIs a mile long, and he had finally gotten sober, which nobody believed, and he had a conversation with me that I recall bits and pieces of, you know, really well, and again, stuck with me. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes people are like, ah, you're a drunk, get out of here. That might stick with you, but I think I would just cop a bigger resentment.
Right. Oh, they're just being a jerk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, what a mm-hmm. ass,
right.
whatever.
Right.
And I remember those things. And when I would try to defend it, I would always come away from the defense just knowing I had lied and knowing that they didn't buy it. And it's like, there's nothing worse than a lie that people don't believe.
Right.
You feel so defeated. It's like getting caught with your hand in the cookie jar. You can't really
lie your way out of it.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. The cat jumped in, and I had to pull the cat out, and but his toy was still in there, and and then the dog distracted me, and then I ate the cookies.
Right.
I don't know.
That's just some.
Well, that was pretty good, huh?
That's some genius level rationalization there. I love it. Yeah. So pushing back on people, you know, that or. Sometimes it just made the pit deeper. And if it didn't build a resentment in me, it just increased the depression. So either way, it pushed me towards drinking more, you know, in my mind. Mm-hmm. It's not like the person pushed me.
Right. Don't you think it was like in your mind?
The realization.
Yeah. I think sometimes people will say things in general, like back then, that were like, you know, they had valid reasons for what they said, and it was so true that you couldn't really say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just things in general that have been really powerful in my life prior to being in addiction, because I was in my very late 20s and my 30s before I started using drugs. but that some things stick with me, and then I have this understanding of them like a decade or two later, where it's just like, oh, that's what they meant. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah. The 2020 hindsight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a revelation when you experience it. I mean, I have those regularly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll think back on some horrible incident, and all of a sudden, God flashes into my mind the lesson I was supposed to learn from that.
Right.
And it's like, oh.
There's your download.
Yeah, there it is. Mm-hmm. There it is. That's what I should have learned 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I figure better late than never.
Right. Yeah, I'm all for that.
So it's, you know, you can't defend the indefensible. It's the evidence is clear to everybody. And I like how they talk about in the beginning here, experimenting with beer and wine in our teenage years seemed natural since so many others were doing it and we wanted their approval. Well, yes and no. I think I was the cautionary whale for my friends, because I was the one who initiated, I think, a lot of the let's get a bottle of wine and drink it between the three of us before we go to the high school dance. And I remember one occasion, it's kind of comical, me and my two other buddies, Mike and Sal, were walking to the dance. We all lived about, I don't know, a mile and a half away from the school. And so we cut through the park, and it's dark, and got the bottle of wine hidden under our coat, and we start passing it around, and all of a sudden some headlights come into the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And my buddy Sal panics and drops the, you know, 3/4 empty bottle. Mm-hmm. And it hit like the sidewalk and just shattered into a million pieces. And I got so pissed at him. Mm-hmm. Well, what'd you do that for? You could just put it in your mirror, you know. And it's like, holy crap. You know, I crapped all over this guy for this little minor
thing. Took away your precious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You dropped my precious.
Yeah. You got that exactly right.
The love.
My precious.
You dropped my love.
Yes.
Because at the time, that's what it was.
So it's like, yeah, I think a lot of people I know did do it just as kind of a, I know for the boys, a lot of the guys I knew were kind of not like me, not real outgoing, but, and that's probably why I attracted them, because I was the more outgoing personality. Mm-hmm. And I could talk to girls.
Mm, yes.
You know?
That's one of the things that I've heard over my life since I've been in recovery, is people share about how, like, they would feel awkward, you know,
right.
And then socially. And so then if they drank, then they would feel okay socially, because they wanted to join in with people.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
But they just were like, and then that would help.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, a lot of these guys would drink to overcome that little bit of social anxiety. Mm-hmm. That was great for me, because, I mean, I knew a lot of straight lacers, guys who, no, I can't drink, you know, you can't drink till you're 21 and all that, or they were athletes.
Mm, so.
The weird part is the athletes wouldn't drink, but man, did they smoke a lot of pot. And that that's a story for another time. But it was being able to move in between the two crowds. Eventually, I moved myself into that group that was willing to take big risks.
So the rule breaker
drink
group.
Yeah, the rule breakers, the bad boys, whatever you want to call it. Even though in a bad boy level, we're probably pretty mild. Took those risks, did those things that were taboo. And there was a certain excitement in that for me, too. And I think it was for them to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Till we all got busted one night, and there were no legal repercussions because we were all underage and, you know, just in a public place drinking. So, and the cops back in those days, it's like, oh, I'll turn you over to your parents. That'll be a fate worse than death. And in most cases, it was, you know. Mm-hmm. Although my parents had quit beating me at that point because I was big enough to defend myself. But that grounding thing, that was pretty awful. Mm-hmm. So, and I wasn't quite brave enough to go out on my own at that point. So, yeah, it was the social thing to do. But for me, social experiment never ended. Not for a long, long time.
Decades later,
yeah.
Little Johnny was not so little anymore, and he was not a teen.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he was a troublemaker.
Mm-hmm. That's what tends to happen if the rule breaking continues on and on and on and on. I mean, I get as teens, I think rule breaking or like trying to test the waters out in that area, that kind of makes sense. But if it just continues on and on and on and you have a belief that you can pretty much do what you want to do when you want to, that turns a little chaotic in your life.
Oh, a little?
Yeah.
Right, right. Because you don't have the tools to deal with situations. And that's something I want to touch on. But you know what?
Yeah,
I want to take a break right now and listen to a little music, and then we'll come back and start over again.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to KRFP, the coolest station in the nation, 90.3 FM. And we are back. And we're talking a little bit about topics from the book Living Sober today. And I'm going to jump into number 10 here, which is Living Sober. And it says, many of us were guilty and angry about the way our family reacted to our drinking. Some of us lost jobs because a boss or a colleague at work objected to our drinking. We wish people would mind their own business and leave us alone. Often we felt angry and fearful, even toward people who had not criticized us. Our guilt made us extra sensitive to those around us, and we nursed grudges. Sometimes we changed bars, changed jobs, or moved to new neighborhoods just to get away from certain persons. So a great number of people besides ourselves were in one way or another involved in our drinking to some degree. When we first stopped drinking, it was a great relief to find out that the people we met in AA, recovered alcoholics, seemed to be quite different, and they reacted to us not with criticism and suspicion, but with understanding and concern. However, it is perfectly natural that we still encounter some people who get on our nerves, both within AA and outside it. We find that our non-AA friends, co-workers, or family members still treat us as if we were drinking. It may take them a little while to believe that we have really stopped. After all, they may have seen us stop many times in the past, only to start again. To begin to put the concept of live and let live into practice, we must face this fact. There are people in AA and elsewhere who sometimes say things we disagree with or do things we don't like. Learning to live with differences is essential to our comfort. It is exactly in those cases that we have found it extremely helpful to say to ourselves, oh well, live and let live. In fact, in AA, much emphasis is placed on learning how to tolerate other people's behavior. However offensive or distasteful it may seem to us, it is certainly not worth drinking about. Our own recovery is too important. Alcoholism can and does kill, we recall. We have learned it pays to make a very special effort to try to understand other people, especially anyone who rubs us the wrong way. For our recovery, it is more important to understand than to be understood. It is not very difficult if we bear in mind that the other AA members, too, are trying to understand, just as we are. For that matter, we'll meet some people in AA or elsewhere who won't be exactly crazy about us either. So, of us trying to respect the rights of others to act as they choose or must, we can then expect them to give us the same courtesy. In AA, they generally do. Usually people who like each other in a neighborhood, a company, a club, or AA gravitate towards each other. When we spend time with people we like, we are less annoyed by those we don't particularly care for. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I have met people in the program who are irritating. In particular, there was a person who, after one of the elections, just went on and on. Basically in a political tirade, totally unrelated to the topic at hand. And I was super annoyed with that. And then, because the chairperson didn't redirect the person back into the conversation, which is kind of the job of the chair in a meeting, I started building a resentment in that direction. And, you know, I stuck it out, and that person got done with their rant, and it passed on. But I went home, and I just couldn't get out of my head, and I was just getting more and more angry and angry. And, you know, I wasn't thinking about drinking at the problem, but I was very uncomfortable. So I called somebody, which is my way of dealing with things that just I can't work out in my head. And it worked out to be one of these live and let live situations. I didn't have to agree with what that person was saying. Right. I didn't have to acknowledge that it was right or wrong. But I did have to let that person say what they needed to say to protect their sobriety. And that's really what it was all about. This person needed to get this off their chest because the group was probably the only people she felt safe enough to talk to about it without getting a lot of crap in return, because this person's opinion might have been unwelcome by family, friends, you know, the group that they ran with. could have been a lot of those things, but the person knew that in AA, if it was threatening their sobriety, it was okay to vomit it up and let the chips fall where they may. That really kind of alienated me from this person. And, you know, even though I worked it out in my mind, yeah, okay, I understand. I was always on edge when this person would share, because I'm like, oh, is it going to, are they going to go into it again? Are they going to, you know, what sort of thing is going to, am I going to hear that's going to irritate me? Well, not only did it not happen, I actually grew to admire this person and their way of thought, because it was so different than mine. You know, it was kind of eye-opening. So, you know, live and let live, and people that annoy you. And I have to apply this in my personal life, too.
Yeah, I'm absolutely
sure you do, too, absolutely. Having two teen and preteen daughters, which are the bane of every father on the planet. You don't know anything. I hate you.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, the poor teenagers. Oh. I think middle school has got to be like the hardest time, honestly. I've talked to a lot of people about that. It doesn't seem like it's just my opinion. But I mean, even women my age are like, oh yeah, middle school. Oof, that's a hard time. There's just a lot going on. But yeah, I mean, as far as, I think for the most part, I have pretty healthy people around me, so I tend to not get offended with the things people say, but it does happen. It does. And we've got a pretty good process that we go through at like CR and restoration night when, you know, and there's like a problem that comes up. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to have a variety of friends who have different thoughts and views on the world and stuff like that. And I think maybe sometimes for myself, like there's certain topics that are hard to hear other people go on and on and on about, because they're similar to certain topics that I don't like hearing in my family go on and on and on and on about. Right. And so it's like this trigger of like, oh gosh. But I will say that actually, if I'm being completely honest, when it's somebody who's like a friend or somebody I don't know that goes on and on about those certain subjects like politics or something, it annoys me less than it does when it's the relative. That's just me being open and honest about it.
Right. Yeah. Well, because we may...
I'm a little more forgiving for other people. I'm like, meh, whatever.
Well, we
because there's not that like track record of all those things.
Right, exactly. Well, and we do tend to be more tolerant with other people when we're not that close to them.
Yeah, I think I am.
Because you can kind of walk away from them without any real damage being done.
Right, and there hasn't been like time and time again of like re-injury and things like that with people that you don't know as well, I think.
Although they can be the same annoying person every time, just based on their raw personality. I mean, I've known people like that. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a person in particular who always went on and on about their family and their social standing and wealth and all that, and being around them was just like a continuous fingernails on a chalkboard screeching. Yeah, just didn't
a little
want
bit of boasting.
Yes,
a little boasty.
Very boasty. But again, I've learned that learning to live with differences is essential to
it
our
is.
Comfort.
It is, really. I mean, it's like, are you going to carry around all the garbage of being upset with people and just carry it around and carry it all around? You got to get the scissors out and cut that.
Oh, yeah.
Let it go. Because it's going to weigh you down.
Oh, yeah. It totally does. Then we bring it into the household.
Right. And then it affects our relationship with other people, because then I'm pissed off.
Right. Well, yeah. And we may come in from an outside influence, but I'm thinking more of the conflict that always goes on at home between people. I mean, I'm sure there are those perfect marriages out there where everything's unicorns and rainbows and they both get along and share equal time, and the children are well behaved and overachievers. And
Johnny's making up a fairy tale right now.
Yeah,
in his head.
I know.
But are you trying to say, though, that like
I'm sure there are families like that.
That like people, the people, the family, the couple
right.
are able to work through conflict well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Like real being well. Around people who are good with conflict.
Right. So but that's great. But that's the exception, my point is.
Yeah, you I know, like being around people rule. Like that. It's good because I learn from them.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. But I know for me, I'll speak for myself. I know for me, it's much easier for me to snap and raise my voice to my wife in an argument than I ever would with anyone outside.
Absolutely. You're not going to yell at the checkout clerk.
Right.
You know, because they're driving you crazy.
Right.
I know.
So
we tend to be more comfortable to the people that we're close with.
Well,
and feel more comfortable and safe, you know?
Well, I also wonder if it doesn't, for me at least, boil down to that old thing about the loudest voice gets the floor. If I yell, do I get my way? If I yell, will she understand that how strong my passion is about something? Is that what I'm trying to convey by raising my voice?
The situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that would be manipulating the situation.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
But we're all human, so it's always, you know, good to identify our own specific things. I have mine. So,
right?
Yeah.
Right? Care to share on that? How much time have we got?
I only have a few minutes before I pick up the kiddo, but let's see. My own types of things. Well, I mean, I'm definitely a wall person. I could throw up a wall and just be like, shh.
What, turn around, walk away? What does that look like?
A wall thrown up could possibly mean that I'm just not going to talk about it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, no, we're not. I'm just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, like in recovery, I have learned to eventually circle back around to it.
Right.
But it's the ones where it's like something keeps happening over and over and over again. And I'm just like, okay.
I'm done.
I'm not even going to engage in this anymore. I'm just going to pray about it and hope for the best. But then that kind of comes out in other areas of like frustration. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like if you go with the stress theory that stress is a bucket that gets filled with drips and drops of stress. And it's really not an issue until the bucket spills over. So yeah, you can be wound up in something.
Comes out somewhere.
Unresolved in your mind, in your heart, wherever. And you get into an outer situation and the stress gets put on you. You'll behave badly or you'll behave in a way that is maybe not horrible. It's not like you're throwing soup in someone's face, but you know, you might say an unkind word.
There's no third-degree burns in the scenario or anything. No violence.
Right. But you may say something unkind.
Yeah.
Or you know, as you walk away,
compassionate. Yeah.
As you walk away from the rude checker, you might mutter something under your breath. You know, like, well, whatever. It's tough. Walls can be important though too. So it's one of those things where, if I'm in a situation where somebody is just not listening to me. My wall is to say, okay, and turn around and walk away from it.
Right, because you have to argue with anybody.
But that's also something that goes back to my childhood. When my parents were going at it, I'd leave. I'd go to my room. I'd go out in the backyard. I'd go away.
Have you since had like healthy people around you that you've gotten good examples on how to deal with stuff?
To a certain extent. To a certain extent. But 40 years of marriage... and 20 years of that building bad habits.
It's hard.
You know, it doesn't get fixed overnight.
No,
and,
it doesn't.
And I'm also not the only one involved.
Right.
You
so
know,
there's
I can't,
progress,
I
right?
Can't, yeah, always.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always progress. I mean, we had a discussion the other night about, you know, how we're communicating with each other because we got into some weird argument over something that was absolutely inconsequential, and it was like a light bulb went off over both our heads simultaneously. And we just said, you know what, when we're talking about stuff like this, we're not going to get all excited. We're going to tell each other how important it is to each other, and then we're just going
to
leave it alone.
Yeah,
because it's obvious that we're not going to resolve it. You're not going to buy into my belief. I'm not going to buy into your belief. But we'll recognize each other's belief and just be okay with it. Again, live and let live.
Live and let live, yeah.
After 40 years, I mean, I think probably normal, healthy people would establish that even before they were married. But
maybe.
Again, I don't think that's the rule. I think that's the exception. Although I do, you know, I love seeing people that are, quote, happily married, or, you know, have some marriage experience, that communicate well. And yeah, like you said, I can learn from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't mind it at all. Well, we are about out of time here, miss. All right.
Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yes. Thank you to our audience. And if you want to, you know, get in touch with us, give us a topic, you can always email us at lrccrecoveryradio@gmail.com. lrccrecoveryradio@gmail.com. Close with the usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other drugs or mental health issues, you do.
Just go.